Lord Chris Batten, welcome to Vatican Radio. Thank you for coming in to see us here. You're the government coordinator for this papal visit to Britain in September. The public perception is perhaps that you were brought in as something of a troubleshooter to help with some of the problems that emerged in the preparation of this visit. Can you give us, first of all, perhaps your version of the story? Was this a job that you sought out, that David Cameron asked you to do, the Bishop's Conference?
The Prime Minister asked me to do it, not because the previous government had made a terrible mess of things, but because plainly we'd had an election campaign and there had been something of a hiatus in getting the arrangements in place. And I think there was an awareness on the Prime Minister's part that we were in danger of falling behind the clock. And needed to pull everything together fairly rapidly. But an awful lot of very good work had been done by the previous administration and by officials. There had been one awful mistake made by a couple of young Foreign Office officials. But apart from that, I think the government machine has been working very well. And I'm absolutely confident that all the arrangements put in place by government, by local government, by the bishops' conferences in Scotland and in England will ensure that the visit is a terrific success.
What do you see, perhaps, then, as the biggest challenges in this job over the coming weeks?
I think the biggest challenges, I hope, we've overcome by putting in place a structure to manage the whole visit as appropriately as possible. I think at the outset, and this is no criticism, people had perhaps underestimated the complexity involved in fitting together both the state visit aspects and the pastoral aspects so that they were a seamless whole. It's incomparably more difficult arranging the state visit of the Holy Father than it would be arranging the state visit of even I suspect, President Obama. President Obama doesn't go out and meet 100,000 people at an open-air venue or whatever. So the difficulties of getting this all together were, I think, perhaps a little underestimated, but I think we're now on top of things. And I think the overall shape of the programme is really exciting. It will ensure, I hope, not only that the Catholic community and the faith communities are able to relate very closely to the Pope at pastoral events and interfaith events, but I think it also gives us the opportunity to demonstrate that the government of a largely non-Catholic country still has a formidably large agenda to work with the Catholic Church. Many of the things about which the government feels most strongly, like overseas development, like accomplishing the Millennium Development Goals, like global equity, climate change, sustainability with the environment, disarmament issues, as well as its domestic agenda of strengthening the relations between community groups and faith groups, all that, when we parade the importance of this relationship, will, I think, surprise some people who may have been critical of the visit in the first place.
There certainly has been a certain amount of criticism. There is a very vocal minority intent on protesting this visit. Is this a serious concern to you?
No. We live in a free society. America, Australia and others are the same. I think it's recognised that if people want to protest peacefully, then they have every right to do so. I think they represent a very small minority of the community, but I don't think anybody would want to snuff out their right to protest. I think it's it's curious that some people think that there's as much to protest about as well, as much to protest about as when, say, the head of a totalitarian country was coming to the United Kingdom. But there it is. What we're very concerned to ensure is not only the security of the Holy Father, but also that the pastoral events aren't disrupted, because that, I think, would give a serious offence. But proper protest within the law is something that one should recognise as one of the signs of freedom.
Some of the criticism has been focused on what are seen to be mounting costs of this papal visit at the same time as the government is urging spending cuts right across the board. What do you say to that?
Well, the costs are going to be slightly higher for the reason that I mentioned earlier, that it is more complicated to put the visit together than we anticipated originally. I think the costs for the church will be greater and the costs for the taxpayer will be greater. I've said myself that I envisage the costs for the taxpayer being in the range of 10 to 12 million. In addition, there are policing costs. But when you think that last year we had a meeting of the G20, which was one day and cost 19 or 20 million, and none of the G20 leaders were going to events with 80 or 100,000 people, I think it makes you realise that we should keep all this in context, because we have a difficult fiscal situation in the United Kingdom at the moment, doesn't mean that we abandon our relationship with the rest of the world, and the role of the Catholic Church in the rest of the world is hugely important to us.
You said recently, though, that Britain must be the most avowedly secular country the Pope has travelled to. What exactly do you mean by that? Are you talking statistics or attitude to this visit particularly?
Now, I'm not talking about the attitudes to this visit particularly. I'm talking about issues like church attendance and the extent to which I think meretriciousness, as well as intellectually developed and formed agnosticism or atheism, have taken such a large part on the public and the media agenda. Now, it's of course the case that Catholic Church, partly through immigration, is one of the few churches which is expanding. Also, there are other faith groups who've seen increases in membership, like Islamic groups. But by and large, I think in comparison with, say, the United States, we would not be able to point to so many people for whom God was a really important part of their lives. There's a line in a very good book by Julian Barnes about death, in which Barnes actually begins the book with this line, saying to his brother that I don't believe in God, but I do miss him. And I think that there's a sense in which that's true of a lot of people in Britain at the moment.
You also talk about intolerance to religious belief, perhaps outright hostility. Is this particularly directed at the Catholic Church, do you think, or not?
I think it's particularly directed at the Catholic Church because of the Catholic Church's prominence and longevity and self-confidence in asserting some basic truths, which we believe to be basic truths. I think that's meant that the Catholic Church, with its rich and sometimes controversial history, has attracted particular odium, often expressed in a rather superficial way by intellectuals and others. But I don't worry too much about that. I think we have to stand our ground, recognising when we do so that we've often been intolerant to others ourselves in the past. We should be arguing that it's ironic that some secularists, not all, are being as intolerant of church groups as church groups were of them in the past. And I think that's one of the many ironies of life.
In this context, though, how difficult is it going to be to get the Pope's message through, to get it out to the public through a media which is more interested often in superficial details of which superstars are around and what gadgets are on sale and so on? It's going to be hard to get the Pope's message through, isn't it?
Not necessarily. First of all, it may be more difficult to get across the message that faith is not a problem, that faith is for many people the way they cope with the challenges of living in the 21st century. I think it should be easier to get across that many of the issues that are raised by the church, particularly given the interests of a younger generation, issues of social equity globally, I think it should be easier to get those things across. It's probably not known that 25% of education in sub-Saharan Africa is provided by the church, that 25% of healthcare in subsequent sub-Saharan Africa is provided by church and church groups. I think the role of church groups in caring for those who are suffering from HIV/AIDS isn't as well known as one would like it to be. So I hope that perhaps there'll be more concentration on those things. I hope there'll be more recognition of what the church says about sustainable development, and what's said, for example, in Caritas in the encyclical Numero Veritate. So I hope that we're able to get those messages across clearly, thanks to His Holiness being in the United Kingdom, having so many huge audiences to address. I'm not at all pessimistic about that.
Can I ask you, finally, on a personal note about your own Catholic faith, how important this has been to you in your political life?
It's been important to me as a cradle Catholic with Irish roots on my father's side. It's important to me in this sense. It's not like being a supporter of Arsenal Football Club, which I am. It's not like being a member of the Conservative Party, which I am. It's much more fundamental than that. It's part of my DNA. And like a lot of Catholics, I've had doubts and difficulties from time to time. But I think of the Catholic Church, I think of Christianity starting with a crisis on Good Friday, and think that my own occasional moments of doubt are as nothing compared with that. I don't think I could get to my age and start thinking rather more regularly about mortality if I didn't have the comfort of my faith. That may be a weakness on my part, but I remember Basil Hume once, I was told that Basil Hume, when he was a schoolmaster, was asked by potential parents of boys at his school what he was preparing the boys for, and he said death. And when you get into your late 60s, you start to think of the wisdom of that observation rather more, and I don't think I could cope with that if I wasn't a Catholic, with all the feelings of guilt and inadequacy and sometimes enthusiasm and hope which that entails, and which many novelists have written about so well.
I see you're sometimes labelled as a liberal Catholic. Does that kind of label worry you? Do you relate to it?
No. I think it's rather a silly label. I know what people mean by it, but the notion that because I'm a trustee of the tablet, I'm somehow a less mainstream Catholic than if I wasn't, as I think real nonsense. I have strong views about everything, including religious and spiritual matters. I think of some of the great 19th century English politicians like Gladstone, who felt even more passionately in some respects about religious matters than he did about political. And I think that intelligent, which I hope I am, certainly well-informed or educated people, not to be interested in spiritual issues as well as political would be a terrible attenuation of life.
Lord Chris Batten, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.